Welcome to the Heartbreak Kids Podcast, where we explore what connects us all in our yoga practice and in our lives. This is where I talk to people about their stories, who they are, what they've been through, and where they're going. And in this podcast, that's what we explore. I believe deep down inside, we're all connected, which explains why we bring ourselves to the top of our mat every day. Welcome to the Heartbreak Kids. Welcome to the next edition to the Heartbreak Kids. I'm here with Kai Kamana, and over the last 6 months, I've gotten to know her pretty well. She's come to a lot of the trainings that or practice weeks that I've been doing. And, you know, I find her very interesting in many different regards. The one thing that I think is maybe the most important is that anytime I look at her, she always has like a smile on her face. Yeah. Which, you know, she's just like friendly by nature, you know, to a certain extent. Like when I acknowledge her and like I'm watching her practice, like there's a certain like, I don't know, loveliness to it. And so, you know, I wanted to talk to her today because I don't know really anything about her, but she has been around me for, you know, for the last year.
Yeah.
Learning. And so thanks for being on the show today.
Cool. Thanks, Taylor.
So let's get a little started. So why don't you tell me a little bit about, you know, the backstory. Tell me a little bit about who you are since I don't really know anything.
Okay. I like to say that the fairy tale version of my story is that I was born in Texas and sort of brewed on the East Coast and have traveled for different academic graduate things after, like, in the aughts. And I've lived lots of places, and oftentimes people ask me if my parents were military because of the different places I've lived, and I say no, they were actually just confused hippies.
So give me some places that you lived.
Fairfield, Iowa.
Okay, that's weird.
On the Transcendental Meditation Commune.
Wow.
Which is where I learned Ashtanga yoga first. Connecticut, New Mexico, Albuquerque. That place, Maine.
It's called That Place?
Yeah, That Place, you know, where it's up in the map somewhere. It's like, yeah, above New York. New York.
So you've traveled so many places, and this was before the age of what?
Like, before the age of 7.
Wow.
Yes.
So you were all over it.
I was all over it, and apparently I decided one day that I wanted to ride the train that we were on from somewhere to somewhere to Chicago.
Yeah.
And I rode like a train by myself to Chicago because I like refused to get on the right connecting with my mother, who clearly was doing something else.
Yeah.
So I thought I was going to move to Chicago, but I didn't.
Okay. You stopped in Ann Arbor.
Yeah, eventually I did make it to Ann Arbor, which is where I live now.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so when did you settle in Ann Arbor?
Let's see. I think it was 2015.
Okay. So relatively recent then.
Yeah. People are like, oh, you're from Ann Arbor. I'm like, no, I still don't understand where I live. I'm sort of understanding it by now, but
yeah.
I was confused about it for a long time. I'd never lived in the Midwest.
Yeah.
I'd lived on the coasts and like in the Southwest.
So. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And so do you like it in Ann Arbor?
It's okay.
Okay.
I mean,
it's a pretty cool town.
It's pretty cool. I did, until very recently, really like it because it felt extremely neutral and 100% mine, of my own making. Like, my family had nothing to do with it.
Right.
And I went there. I also like to tell people that I went there for love because my partner got a job at the university. So I was like, sure, I'll just come with you. I'm not finished with my degree, but I've already been traveling. This is fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you like to tell people that, but is that actually the case?
That I moved there for love?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes it's a different thing between like what you tell people and what the actual truth is.
No, that's like the firm real truth. And
okay.
Like, it's, I like, the phrase I like to tell people is that comes from being surrounded by hardcore academics who are like, no, you have to get double jobs. That's the only way you move with your partner. And I'm like, no, I prefer the other way, which is like, I'll figure it out. Yeah. I'm not that worried.
So what is it that, what do you do for a living?
I write and I teach yoga part-time.
Okay.
And I dog parent, which is not, you know, a monetary thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a time thing.
It's a time thing.
Which is sort of a monetary thing, too.
Another way to say that is I got really sick at the end of my dissertation writing process, and no one could figure out what it was, and by no one, I mean doctors, blood tests. Like, I had all the tests, and there are really good doctors in Ann Arbor, and a group of them told me that I needed to only rest. And they were like, you have to stop. Because I was writing a dissertation, I was writing articles, and I was teaching undergraduates at Michigan State.
Right.
And also like trying to live my life and, you know, being a really healthy alcoholic, because that's important. I was a really healthy alcoholic. Okay.
Is that possible?
No. No. It's not impossible.
Yeah.
But yeah. So I had to, my doctors told me to stop working, and it took me.
Because your health was that bad that you felt like it?
Yeah.
And how long ago was this, if you don't mind me asking?
They told me in 2015, like as soon as I moved to Ann Arbor. Ah. And I was like, no, I'm just like learning how to figure out my new place because, you know, I've never lived in the Midwest before. And it took me a year. And I got really, really depressed right before I decided to take the year. And one of my really good friends was murdered by the police. And my partner was like, I need you to go to therapy. And I need you to actually try, because I'm afraid that this isn't, nothing's going to work. So just go to therapy and see what your therapist says about stopping.
You know, your friend that was murdered, this happened in Michigan?
No, he was he was on a research trip in Nebraska, and he was doing research with communities of Mexican immigrants and like art practices.
Yeah.
And he got arrested.
Wow.
And he never made it out of jail.
Wow.
Of the holding cell.
And so did that just like, I mean, obviously that sends you into your head because of just all of the feelings. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I'm wondering like, what did that do to your life at the time? Did it like turn the volume up on, you know, everything else that you were experiencing?
It actually made, it did something weird, which I have thought about. Like, we had plans to do certain things academically together. He was this really, like, joyous, wonderful, gay, brown, like, queer person. And we had these ideas about, like, writing about it and doing, like, co-writing projects, which is something kind of unheard of unless you're in, like, science.
Right.
And when he died, I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I don't have a job. What is the point of this? I don't have anyone to write with, which are lies I told myself.
Yeah.
But it actually loosened my grip on the person who I was really sure I was, which was entirely cerebral and really committed to becoming a professor.
Okay.
And so instead of like gripping really hard to the idea that I was still going to be a professor, it was the first time in my adult life that I consciously said, okay, I'm just gonna like let this happen, because I couldn't stop crying for like days.
Yeah.
And
that seems normal to me.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it.
And so it sort of was a point in time where I was either drunk and crying or just crying and going to therapy and going to doctors, and none of my work was getting done. And I was like, okay, I say yes to the doctors telling me to take time off. And I did. And when I told my dissertation committee, they actually responded to me in a way that is sort of like replicates an abusive parent situation. They were like, no, you're not trying hard enough. And I was like, okay, bye.
Yeah. And so you stopped that whole process?
I did.
Wow.
I stopped. And I sort of, I had to like stop drinking so that they could test different medications on me. Because the first medication they tried, I didn't think I needed to stop drinking, and I would just like hallucinate and black out. So that actually started my forceful dry spell.
How'd that work for you?
It was really not okay with me. It was really not okay.
I did a couple of those and they're terrible.
I mean, obviously it didn't work.
No, it doesn't work. It literally does not work at all. It's terrible.
I was like, why am I afraid of hallucinating? I've done that before. It's totally fine. And I'm not working, so it doesn't matter. So the spiral, like I thought I hit the bottom when my friend died, and then I just kept going, and then I just kept going.
And yeah. How much were you drinking, though?
A lot. Like, I didn't eat. I just drank.
Yeah, it's a lot of calories.
I know. And like, I was like, it's fine. So many calories. I'll just put some coconut milk in here. And it's like, it's nutritious.
And so, what were you drinking?
What was I drinking? I drank a lot of wine and whiskey and vodka and... At one point, it was rum.
So you did all of them, basically.
All of them.
And as far as you went, was just drinking?
During that period, yes.
Okay.
If we back up my story, and I tell you the other part of my childhood, is that I'm not sure that I ever chose to do drugs. Let's go with my father. My father, who is deceased, and I really think society is happy about that. He did a lot of criminal things, and he was, how do I say this? The phrase that comes to mind is that he was a pornographer, but like that's actually a profession that people think is okay.
Yeah.
He did like illegal like trafficking. And he...
Of drugs?
No.
Of people?
Of people. So I was born into that, which is the other side of my not fun story. And so I didn't really realize that drugs, I mean, we're talking like not marijuana.
Yeah.
We're talking heroin and hallucinogenics. I didn't really know what hallucinogenics were until I was sent to a California like hippie camp the summer before high school. And I learned what LSD was.
Because you were doing it there?
Yeah.
It's a great way to learn about it.
I did it there on purpose for a week straight.
Okay.
And that's how I entered high school.
Awesome.
So, I mean, yeah, I'm pretty sure I had like a drug habit before I knew what it was.
Yeah.
And...
Were you just escaping, though? I mean, like, was there suffering involved at that age, or what? Or what was the compulsion to, like, get you there?
Yeah.
I mean, even though that you said the stuff about your dad, like, I mean, you seemed relatively happy when you were telling me, you know, about traveling, you know, on the trains and with mom and all of that stuff, like... You know, is there some sort of trauma that goes along with like the stuff that you got going on that you were trying to escape? Or was it just like, I'm going to do some drugs, or I'm not even going to think about it, I'm just going to do these things?
Yeah. So I think that how we wound up in Iowa is that my mother moved us away from him.
Got it.
And I did not like it there because I didn't really know what was happening. And there's a lot of people have written about this. Like, is it a cult or is it a commune types of situation? And I'm of the opinion that cults happen when you're told what to wear, what to eat, and where to be at a certain time. And my experience was that it was a cult. which is separate from just being a kid, right?
Like, right.
Kids aren't necessarily automatically experiencing cult behavior. But like everyone was doing it.
Yeah.
And I didn't like it. So yeah.
Just didn't fit for you.
It didn't fit for me.
And it felt weird?
And it felt weird. Yeah. And it's also sort of where my first memory of like weird older dudes like coming up to me and like asking me who my parents were and telling me like I was like a golden child or like some like weird stuff that you should never say to people.
At all.
I mean, ever. Unless they're, you know, older than you and maybe monks.
Yeah, I could see where that might be fitting for that.
Yeah.
And so what did you get out of that place by going to California?
No, we she like moved us away and drove us to Texas.
Oh, okay.
Around my sixth, seventh birthday. And in Texas, as a kid, I was like the wildest. I was the wildest child. And I really think that I was trying to escape like everything. Like that early on, I would jump off buildings and I was like trying to like incorporate this idea of being able to fly, which is something that people told me I could do when I was in Iowa. So I was like, oh, I can fly.
The golden child that can fly.
Yeah, because like yogic flying, have you heard of this?
No.
It's so weird. You have to YouTube it later.
Okay.
But there's like this weird thing that they do where they actually like believe that they're flying, but really they're just like moving weirdly in lotus. And so I was like convinced I could fly. So I jump off buildings.
Awesome.
And I broke all like everything. I have like so many broken bones in my life. It's ridiculous.
You still experience pain from some of the broken bones and stuff?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So tell me what happened after high school. Like, you know, mm-hmm. you started high school. Like, you know, how did you transition into this person who's going to, you know, be working on their dissertation?
My dad died when I was in high school. And my mom, like, lost her shit. And I became the person of charge of, like, making sure that I could live because sometimes I look back at myself and I'm like, damn, that was cool. When he died, the court got involved for reasons that I didn't know about. And he had in his will that he didn't want my mother to have sole custody of me. So I actually had to go to family court when I was 15 and understand what this meant. And in that process, I was like, oh, I should become an emancipated minor. So I emancipated myself at 15.
Wow.
Which just meant that I could sign papers, which was really important, which is how I got out, basically. I studied really hard. I like to question things. I had like an inquisitive mind. I did well on my SATs. I applied to a bunch of schools, and because I didn't need a parental signature for applications, I just sent them.
Yeah.
And I wound up getting a pretty good scholarship to a small liberal arts college for women in Massachusetts. So I went. And that's...
That started the whole process of...
It totally didn't.
No?
No, I went to... I did my undergraduate work, and I was like, I'm not good at this. I just want to party. I'm good at partying. And...
I mean, were you partying around that time?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. It just got the worst when you were having all of the stuff happen in Ann Arbor.
I don't know.
Oh, there was... Okay. Before that, it was hardcore. You were drinking only... You were drinking wine in Ann Arbor. Yes. You were high class.
High class.
Okay.
I could identify the alcohols that I was drinking. Okay.
All right. I think I'm understanding now.
My best friend in undergrad was a campus drug dealer. And... would make runs to New York to pick up whatever for the campus. And obviously, like, we had to test it.
Yeah.
So, that was my best friend. And my roommate was really interested in hallucinogenics. And so she actually had a really good mushroom connect. And I remember, like, one day all three of us sitting down and being like, should we just go all in and just, like, do this and provide this service to the campus? And something, there's always been like something in me, and this gets me, that's the only reason I'm alive right now. I was like, I don't think so. I don't think I want to do that.
I mean, it's also scary too, because I mean, the, you know, cost, benefit, money.
Yeah.
But jail.
Yeah. It's, no. But those were my people, and also like super smart, super gifted. Like, they're totally fine now. We all made it out alive. They have done jail time, but they're still alive. So I graduated, also amazing, and moved directly to Brooklyn from there, where I, got involved in the art scene that was happening in 2004. And I sort of got adopted by this really cool lesbian couple who were like building a gallery. And by adopted, I mean, they saw me, they were like, you are wild, you need assistance. Help us build this gallery and we will feed you. We're not gonna give you money. We're gonna feed you.
It's like another commune situation.
It was more like I looked like I needed to be fed.
Okay.
And like a place to go.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And they were really good to me and sort of helped me survive my first year when I was there.
Wow. So tell me how yoga entered into the picture. Like, where did you start this at? I mean, obviously in, you know, the commune cult.
Yeah.
In Iowa, like, obviously transcendental meditation was there, but, and you learned yoga, but I mean, when did you dive back in? Were you trying to get sober or something, or?
Yeah. What? I mean, I was trying to get my mind right. Sobriety came later. I really started, I started thinking about it and trying it out in New York when I was going back to school for a master's, but that didn't really work out.
Yeah.
I didn't like anyone who was teaching.
Any of the yoga teachers in Brooklyn?
No.
Wow.
I'm really sensitive about my space.
Okay.
And the rooms just didn't feel right.
I mean, it's super, I mean, it's high powered and all of the, yeah. Brooklyn, New York, all of those areas. It's like, it's high powered. And there also, if you're going to make a living doing yoga, like, you got to be like a personality, basically. So
yeah,
I could
totally.
See where a lot of times, like, where someone's really presenting themselves as not really who they are because they're trying to pay their rent or whatever, or, you know, and maybe not everyone, but still.
Yeah. So it took me moving to Austin to work on my PhD is when I started getting really serious about yoga. And, you know, the first time I heard you say the words, you'll never feel worse than you do drunk on a mat.
I'm serious.
I know. I don't know that I've ever felt worse than that.
Well, also, like, you know, I feel like you'll never feel worse going to, like, a meeting. Mm. And, you know, like, this obviously can be something that we can talk about, too, but because that's how I take care of my sobriety. But I remember when I would go drunk to meetings, mm-hmm. and there is nothing worse than that, like being that guy sitting there where your life has been reduced, mm-hmm. to showing up at a place where you're trying to get sober, but you're actually drunk at the meeting. It is the worst thing ever.
Yeah.
So it's like same thing with your mat, you know?
Oh, yeah. But something, I was like, I'm just going to lose. I didn't really know what I had to lose, except, you know, my mind at point.
Did you feel like you were losing your mind?
I felt like I needed to fortify my mind. Like, I needed to be really clear about why I was there, because I really didn't want to be back in Texas.
Yeah.
And so my options were do my coursework, do my teaching load, get wasted, blackout, wake up, do it all over.
Right.
Or do all of those things, wake up, go to yoga, and then be like, why am I doing this? And it took a while. It took a while for me to stop getting wasted.
Yeah. So how did yoga come into that, you know, into your schedule at that point, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so, I mean, and obviously I'm assuming that it wasn't Ashtanga yoga from the...
No.
Yeah.
It was, I lived in a location where there was a vinyasa studio less than 2 blocks away. And so if it had been any further, I think I could have talked myself out of it.
You could walk 2 blocks too.
I could walk a block and a half, and half of that was like through an alley, and I was okay with that. And it just felt like I was like getting back into my body after everything felt bad. I mean, like it was better to, I had this like realization at some point during the process that it was better to feel something than to just like not feel anything. And I had spent a really long time just like numbing out and like trying to erase my memory and just like trying to like pretend like I didn't have a broken arm or something. Mm-hmm. But when I would show up to yoga, I was like, oh, if I don't breathe right, I'm gonna hyperventilate. If I don't like put my hands on the floor at some point, I'm gonna fall on my head. It was a matter of simple mechanics,
yeah,
to me. And it did translate into my daily life, where the work of the first year of graduate work is brutal. Like, you take 4 courses, you teach up to like 175 people, and you have to do your own work.
Right.
And I wanted time to just breathe and be a body.
Yeah.
And not like doing all of that. And it translated into me being able to do all of those brutal things better.
Just by practicing yoga.
Just by practicing basic vinyasa.
Yeah.
And then I was only in, I was only in Austin for 2 years. I finished my coursework in 2 years and won a pre-dissertation fellowship to move to Massachusetts. So I did. And I tried Ashtanga in the town where I was, and I didn't really get it, and I didn't like it.
Yeah.
And it felt like, it felt like feel your lotus blossoming, which is weird. It just felt too...
It felt like that?
Yeah.
Wow.
I think it was the space.
Got it.
And that's
so it didn't work for you.
It didn't work for me. And I was like, these people all want to do the same thing? Why?
Right.
So then I...
But a lot of people have that, though.
Yeah.
I mean, it happens a lot, you know? It's just like people's first introduction to yoga. It's like, you know, and all of a sudden it's like they start with vinyasa, and then all of a sudden they stumble into a Ashtanga class, and they just, they don't get it, you know? Doing it over and over and over again, like, why would you do that?
Yeah, I didn't get it. So I practiced at a Baptiste studio, which makes sense in Massachusetts.
Right.
And eventually I was like, I want to try Ashtanga again, but then I moved from there to Ann Arbor. And there were a couple studios in Ann Arbor, which they didn't really work for me.
They didn't work for you.
I'm picky.
You mean Ashtanga studios?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I tried every studio in Ann Arbor when I moved there.
Yeah.
By the time I moved there, I had like a daily practice of something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it was keeping you that mindful.
It was keeping me on track.
Yeah. And you're still drinking at this point?
Oh, yeah.
So how long have you been sober?
Almost a year. Almost as long, a little longer than I've known you.
Okay.
Maybe.
All right. Well, so, hopefully I've had a positive impact on you so that maintains.
Yeah. No, seriously. I feel like it has.
Okay. I feel good about that. Thanks. I mean, I don't know if I should say thanks there, but it's like, I'm trying to do in the world.
I should be saying thank you.
I mean, yeah, maybe. But that's what I'm trying to do in the world, is like have people wake up a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because people are asleep. I mean, we're asleep on our phones. We're asleep in the booze. We're asleep on, we're asleep. So it's not surprising that like yoga shifted all of this stuff and, you know, gave you more awareness, kept you on track, you know, because that's what it's done for me too. And also countless others too.
Yeah.
I mean, if you listen to all the Heartbreak Kids episodes, it's like, some of them are freaking amazing. It's like, I can't believe
it's true.
Yeah. They made it out alive. Like, what are you talking about? Like in yoga when it's as bad as what it is, it's like, whoa, it's craziness. So
yeah,
it's awesome though.
I mean, the thing that brought me to yoga eventually was like, I was trying to get my mind right.
Yeah.
But the thing about Ashtanga is like, I don't have to worry about it. It's happening. And because it's the same every day, I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
I can just be like, oh, so I've had a serious back injury. Maybe I should deal with that.
Because if you don't, you're going to pay for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's like a really different way of taking care of myself than just, you know, breathing and being in my body. It's like a deeper, more like tuning in level of breathing and being in my body.
Yeah.
And as a person who is like, I need to be able to say no to things, and it's like all me. So it's really about keeping myself in check with like, oh, just because I can do this one twist, what's that actually doing? Am I saying yes to this twist? Okay, yes, okay, cool. So it's a process of like being in like constant consent with my body, I think about.
Wow.
Yeah.
Never heard it put that way, actually.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to wrap my head around whether or not I do that.
Yeah. I mean, I could like break my shoulder if I wanted to.
Oh, well, I mean, I can too.
Yeah.
I mean, I could do all that.
But like, you don't.
Correct.
So that's.
Yeah. So maybe I am doing it.
Yeah. I think you're probably doing that.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know if I've ever heard it put that way, but that's actually very insightful. Like you're constantly asking yourself, like, am I able to allow this to happen?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that actually feels good.
Yeah. And it's like, just because my body can, it doesn't have to.
Doesn't mean I should.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah, you probably shouldn't do that right now.
Right.
Like, my back feels like it's going to explode. Yeah, you should probably not do that back bend then.
Right.
Yeah. Interesting. Mm-hmm. And so why today have you been drawn so strongly to Ashtanga yoga? Because that reason?
I mean...
Or is there a deeper or bigger reason why you practice on a consistent basis?
I'm sort of trying to figure out a lot of shit. The stuff from my childhood is really intense. I like the version I told you. It's a good, like, PG-13 version.
Okay.
But the real version isn't. And all of the substance abuse in my past has to be, like, healed.
Yeah. I mean, it's trauma.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's trauma.
It's like, all trauma.
Yeah.
And so every single day I wake up, I panic, I feel like I'm gonna throw up or die, and then I go to my mat. This is true. This is why I do it.
Okay.
And I've reached like a point in my like process of being a person where I'm like, just make it to the mat. Just make it to the mat. Make it to the mat. Make it to the mat. You don't have to do anything. Just do it. And I can't always do it.
Yeah. Because the things are so hard that they're too intense to deal with.
Yeah.
I mean, the poses or the psychological things that are happening?
My brain.
Your brain.
So, like, the earlier I get up, I found, like, this sort of sweet spot between 3:59 and 5:59. And if I wake up between those times, I'm going to be okay.
You can get it done?
Yeah. I can get it done.
Yeah. Because you wake up with anxiety or
I
you wait?
I wake up, like, either in, like, a stress pool of my, like, own sweat, anxiety, like, freaked out. Yeah.
And the practice has helped you with it? Like, mm-hmm. if you make it to mat consistently?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It helps me a lot with that, too. I've had this new layer uncover of anxiety, waking up like something's wrong or something.
Yeah.
Where, like, nothing's actually wrong.
No.
Like,
you were sleeping.
Yeah. I'm like, you know, like, I've been doing my own therapy, and it's like, oh, yeah, it's like you're supposed to go back to your center.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I like, recenter myself, and I'm like, okay, like, I just got done sleeping. There's nothing wrong with me. I'm getting ready to go practice. Practice is the best thing for me.
Yeah.
But like, I got to step back and like get back into my body as mm-hmm. soon as I wake up. It's yeah. craziness. Yeah. So I totally get it. I totally get it.
Yeah. And I think like that's probably why I'm always smiling, right? Like, there's no place I'd rather be. It's like every single time I'm practicing, I'm like, yes.
I'm doing it.
I did it. I'm doing it.
That's the look that I'm talking about right there.
And it's like the only thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it means so much too.
Yeah.
So what's it mean to you to have a teacher? And why do you actually need one?
I need a teacher because left to my own devices, I just go wild. I'd be trying the third series if I didn't have a teacher. I mean,
you'd be breaking your shoulders.
Like. I know. I can break my shoulder. I feel like it's lineage.
And that feels good to you?
Yeah, it does.
Because there's a certain like, structure in that or something like that? Or
yeah.
Is that what speaks to you about it? Or?
So like broadly, I think a lot about like lineage. Not just in yoga. But I like to be able to trace the roots of like the thing that I'm doing. And it isn't so much that I need to know everything or be right,
yeah.
right? Like I don't really care about the right history. I care about like what's lasted, like what is sustained, what has been like so important to people who came before me that it's like something that I'm doing. I think that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It feels like depth or something that you yes. can't quite put your finger on, but it matters. Mm-hmm. I think it matters to a lot of people, and some people haven't experienced it yet either. And Ashtanga yoga is not the only lineage that has like that sort of depth or lineage or whatever, but it's definitely like maybe the one in the most, in the forefront of like that conversation, I think. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what do you struggle with the most in your practice?
Not throwing up on my mat.
No, you're not drinking. So
I know.
Throw up is, probably further away.
That's
why
not
do you feel
true.
Like you're going to throw up?
That is a good question. It's a question that I've been asking myself, and it hasn't happened in a couple months, or maybe 1 month, but I like wake up so anxious that sometimes I throw up. Like that's what it is at this point. I'm like, it's anxiety. It's like my body is responding to something that I don't know or why it's happening. So I say that the hardest thing I struggle with is that. Recently, I've started to wonder why I'm not obsessed with getting poses. I'm like, I could do this thing, and I do this thing, and then I stop doing this thing, and it was a pose. And I'm feeling really not married to the practice.
Yeah. I mean, but there's also like a certain depth to, I think, your practice that, you know, doesn't necessarily happen like right off the beginning, like the beginning of people's like journeys or whatever. Like there's a certain like adulting that is happening in your practice, or you know what I mean? Like there's, yeah. or a maturity or something that is happening in your practice where like you're actually doing it for, deeper reasons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're actually doing it for like this psychological thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because as I'm present and watching, there's, you know, there's focused energy. It's like kinetic. It's like, you know, the building of this, I don't know, this power or something. And also like I've also seen, you know, really over the last year or whatever, someone who I felt like when I first met you that you were in sort of like this cocoon or shell or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen you just kind of like, you know, like slowly like blossom. It's mm-hmm. been freaking amazing to watch. Yeah. And you're also happier and less skittish than, I mean, you like, I'm just being honest. Like, it's not a bad thing. It's like, yeah. that's where people are. So it's pretty amazing just to kind of see that. And who knows, like 3 or 5 more years down the road, like what, I mean, what are we going to be talking about on the Heartbreak Kids episode 2 with Kai, you know? Like,
I don't know. Throat stuff.
Yeah, it's like, what are we doing with Kai Mana there? Like, it's like, what is happening, you know? So it's like this crazy evolution. So yeah, it's been amazing, Kai, to watch like this whole thing.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. I can't really see it, but
no, I mean, people don't see it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It's pretty amazing. Well, I appreciate you being on the show today.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks cool for sharing that. Your truth and thanks for like, being vulnerable.
Yeah.
It's pretty powerful. Thanks for being a part of the community and thanks for help holding it together and supporting me and, supporting Ashtanga Yoga Columbus and all that stuff. It means a lot to me, and I think it means a lot to the people that you're surrounded by. So,
thank you.
Yeah, thanks for being on the show today.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning in. If you want more information about Ashtanga Yoga, visit AshtangaYogaColumbus.com. You can also check out my website, which is TaylorHuntYoga.com. See you guys next time.